Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning into the Save the Earth podcast, put together by UConn Perg Save the Earth campaign, where we explore intersectional approaches to environmentalism, connecting UConn's vibrant environmental community, and building on our massive climate movement. My name is Ben Albee. I help moderate these episodes, and I'm a sophomore at UConn studying political science and environmental studies. If you'd like to get involved or learn more, you can find more info at PIRG, that's PIRG.UConn.edu. Welcome back to the Save the Earth podcast. It is Ben alongside Monet Paredes back with the second semester of doing this podcast. And we have some great guests here today, some UConn activists. If you guys want to all go around and introduce yourselves, that would be great. And then we can get started with the interviews.
Yeah, like Ben said, I'm Monet. I'm here moderating again. Phoebe, you want to introduce yourself first?
Yeah, sure. I'm Phoebe. I'm a junior environmental science student. I'm president of Eco Garden Club, which is involved in the Planting Our Roots initiative. And I think that's about it, I have to say.
Awesome. Aaron, you want to introduce yourself as well?
Sure. My name is Aaron. I am a senior with an individualized major in urban planning. I am vice president of Eco Garden, so I work really closely with Phoebe, and we also used to live at the Spring Valley Student Farm together, which is a student farm and housing sort of community just off campus, well, 5 miles off campus, and also working on the Planting Our Roots initiative.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear more about it. And finally, we have Marissa here. Marissa, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello. My name is Marissa. I am a junior natural resources student with a concentration in conservation and sustainability. I'm the president of Baile, Bringing Awareness into Latino Ethnicities, which is a partner for the Planting Our Roots initiative. And I'm also the vice president for CASA, the Central American Student Association.
Wow. You guys are incredible. Marissa, you do so much. I think we can get started just talking about like what is all that? What are all those groups, if you want to just like introduce them and like say what you do with them, say what their goals are and stuff?
I would love to. So Baile originally started as an activist organization to bring awareness into issues in the Latinx community. And through time, it shifted into a dance organization. And so what we were doing, and this is my experience freshman year, is that we would meet biweekly and learn a dance from a specific country. So bachata from the Dominican Republic, or merengue, salsa, you name it. And we decided that it was time to kind of reincorporate our roots back into Baile. And so last year we started incorporating awareness events into our Baile sessions. And so every week we would host an alternating awareness event or dance session and talk about a country and the current issues facing it. Sometimes talking about how it's impacted by climate change, which is my little plug. And then the week after that, we would move on to, well, what dances do they dance there and what can we teach our group? So
that's so cool.
Thank you. It's a really exciting way to celebrate all of our roots, especially for students who may not, maybe from a country that's underrepresented when we talk about Latinx identities. And so it's such a fun organization and it really has brought me a sense of community at UConn.
Was it called Baile before you started dancing, or was that like a transition?
I think it was a wild coincidence.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is bizarre. Cool.
It was kind of meant to be.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so CASA is a recently formed organization that began last year. And this was initiated because there was a lack of representation for Central American students on campus. We usually haven't been really represented when we're talking about issues in the Latinx community. And I think that a lot of times Central American countries are viewed through a lens of suffering. And we see this with conversations about hurricanes Iota and Eta that struck the Caribbean coast of Central America in the fall. At CASA, we think it's important to talk about the problems happening in our countries, but we merge those conversations with celebrations and reminiscence about our favorite foods, places to visit, and dances.
We actually partnered with Baile, which is a great way to learn about our countries, and we did Honduras, and then we taught Junta, which is a dance from Honduras, and so it was a nice way to kind of meld our cultures and start showing people that we're here on campus, we exist, and we want to share our culture with other people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like those could connect very well, so it's good to hear that you guys could like both link up those two organizations and bring them together.
Thank you.
Does Casa mean home too?
It does.
That's so cute. I love it.
I find that organizations in Prilec are really good at giving their title something with a double meaning. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We got it. After this, we have to rebrand Eco Garden and make it more appealing.
Perg has to be rebranded because Perg doesn't even mean anything.
Me and Ben are talking about how Perg, like, it sounds scary. Like, why does it sound scary? Like, good, like, we're like trying to change the world.
But Marisa, you're also, I guess this is relevant, you're an intern at the Office of Sustainability, right?
I sure am.
And what do you accomplish there?
So my role at the Office of Sustainability has been a big adjustment. Mm-hmm. I came into the office during the summer of 2020 completely in a virtual setting, which was a weird experience to adjust to. And this was during a time where there were renewed calls for racial and social justice conversations, especially at the institutional level. And so being the only Latina in the office and working in an office that had one person of color, I felt that it was important to reinitiate those conversations in this office because there's no reason to talk about the environment and conservation if we're not talking about its intersection with so many other facets of our lives. And so my beautiful coworker and I created an environmental justice webpage that has all these different resources on vocabulary surrounding intersectional environmentalism, how to be a good ally, resources for students of color on campus, especially mental health resources, because we recognize the toll that things like environmental racism and racism play on our students of color. And we also detailed.
What is the webpage? So I know it would be great to link that if people wanted to go look it up and find it.
Yeah, it's at, right there.
Yeah, it's at sustainability.ucon.edu. And we have a tab on our webpage for environmental justice. And we have an upcoming blog that will feature blogs by any students who want to submit something. So if anybody listening is interested, we would love to have your blog there discussing your thoughts or experiences with EJ. And so, yeah, this webpage was really a way for the office to say, we recognize that intersectionality is so important in our field. And while the office hasn't done a good job historically, they're taking steps in the right direction. And this has been, it was a long process to get it published. And I recognize that there were a lot of institutional barriers to doing so, which has made my role in the office difficult. But I'm lucky that people in the office here have been more receptive to having these conversations. And I'm currently working on a learning series with one of my coworkers to present to the interns. And this will be trainings on privilege, positionality, intersectionality. We want to bring in a guest speaker to talk about racism and how we can be anti-racist actively and also be good allies. And this is something intended to address some of the institutional problems we've had in the past and truly look at our internship in an intersectional way.
Yeah. Do you want to elaborate if you know the institutional problems that have gone on in the office?
Yes, I would love to. So I've noticed that there's been a lot of hesitation from upper management to really acknowledge the intersections of sustainability and the environment with different social issues and racial issues. And so there's a lot of privilege in the office and in the people who work there. A lot of their lives haven't been touched by climate change in the way that other people's lives have been. And so it's been difficult to stop and encourage everyone to reflect on their privilege and recognize the ways in which they can use that to be better allies to communities of color. It's been a constant debate and conversation in the office about how can we actively recognize our privilege
and be willing to be vulnerable about it. Because I think that being vulnerable can be really difficult for people, especially in upper management when they feel institutional pressures from higher up.
Exactly, yeah. And do you see like there's hope for that to change like as time goes on? Fingers crossed.
I'm really hoping. I'm trying to dedicate my time and my energy to it. And I hope that the work is received the way that it's supposed to come off.
I'm hoping that it's some sort of generational thing, because I don't know, it just reminded me of this internship I had last summer, and it was run by this very old, very wealthy woman, and she was very blatantly racist. And the way that we talked about sustainability was not very productive. But I think as like, you know, young people like us, we take on leadership and then we push this movement forward. I think that's the good way to go. So on that, I want to switch over to Phoebe and Aaron, because you guys are very involved with Eco Garden. And well, I know there's another podcast that was just made with two people from the Spring Valley Student Farm. It's Aaron and no, you're Aaron.
Danny.
No, yeah. But you guys are president and vice president of Eco Garden. So how are those two like related? Are they the same thing or?
Okay. Annika graduated last year and Danny graduated in December. And I guess Planting Our Roots kind of started, or the idea started, at Spring Valley Student Farm. We have weekly meetings and we saw that there was a change grant and we got started thinking, and eventually came on. I think we'd gone to a conference a few weeks earlier about, there was a really good keynote speaker about talking about how important it is to have culturally relevant foods, like local foods that are relevant when maybe the people are from different places. So that was a really cool idea. Go ahead, Aaron.
Just contextually, the food security study was sort of like ongoing at UConn as well. So we didn't know the results of the study yet, but you know, it sort of made us rethink like how food secure are like UConn students. Annika, I think, gets the credit for really starting the initiative. But
yeah,
Eco Garden is a space operated technically by the Spring Valley Student Farm, but it's its own student organization that runs it. And for anyone who doesn't know, if you go like
W lot.
You go past W lot, past Mansfield Supply, there's a big empty field, and that's where Eco Garden is. And so the student farm operates a little less than an acre of community garden space, and we could do the programming and sort of management of that land.
Yeah.
Phoebe, you want to get back to the initiative, I guess?
Before we dive like too much into the initiative, can we like, I just want to know more about like, what do you guys do like day to day? Like, what is managing that involve? Like, I'm just interested to hear.
It's farming, I guess. We're the Spring Valley Student Farm is, we do organic, sustainable farming, and that means no tilling, crop rotation. Basically, we're trying to keep the carbon in the ground and not release it into the atmosphere, and do everything else around sort of agriculture practices that makes it so that we don't have to do tilling. Phoebe, you want to take it from there?
Yeah, so Eco Garden is kind of run by Spring Valley, which was really helpful because students aren't here over the summer and Spring Valley has student workers, which I worked for Spring Valley in summer 2019, and we would just go to Eco Garden and we kind of used it as like an extension space of Spring Valley where we'd grow certain vegetables that we didn't really have room for, which was why we thought it would be a great place for the Planting Our Roots initiative, because it was kind of just overflow and it's closer to campus, which makes it easier for students to access. And yeah, it was used, but it could have a better use growing culturally relevant foods.
And for anyone who doesn't know how Spring Valley and Eco Garden possibly affect them, if you go into the dining halls and there's a little like green sticker or something next to something that you're picking up, that means that it was grown locally by fellow UConn students in a sustainable way and then delivered right over to the dining halls.
That's super cool. I did not know that.
It's I don't know with COVID, with the pickup situation, if you can still see it anymore, but yeah, usually it's a little green sticker.
So you started talking about the Planning Our Roots initiative. That's like a string of events, right? And you've gotten started, you've had a couple of those. The panel that you guys all worked together on this.
Yeah.
That I was not able to go. And I'm very, I think if you guys could talk about how that went, let me know personally, and also let whoever's listening know. Yeah. Like what insights do you get? Like, what was the goal of that panel?
So I guess Planting Our Roots, our main goal is to grow culturally relevant food, but you know, that's kind of seasonal. We can't really get started until spring. And in the meantime, we wanted to continue the conversation. So last fall, we had an event called What's That Vegetable, where we talked about different vegetables, a little bit of how they grow. It was just kind of an introduction as to like what the options were to grow and to familiarize people with different foods. And Aaron and Marissa, do you want to talk about the panel recently?
Yeah, so it sort of happened, I would say, due to COVID. Our original agenda was to have, you know, cultural organizations, including Baile, out at Eco Garden, growing stuff last spring, and then COVID happened. So we've sort of had to make some adjustments. And one of the opportunities that we ran into working with PIRG, as well as Baile, was a panel full of different sort of professionals and legislators working in the food networks of Connecticut. That includes like food banks. We had the largest food bank, as well as a lot of state legislators who are working on COVID relief legislation and ensuring that people have access to food during the pandemic. So we got some really great updates about what sort of efforts have been ongoing during the pandemic, how they've been going, how they've had to change their practices, as well as all these legislation action items, petitions to sign for legislation related to pandemic relief right now. So yeah, we're really lucky to have the great panel that came to the event.
Yeah, Marissa, you want to have anything to add to that?
Yeah.
Your role or PERLAC's role?
Yeah, so I got involved with this initiative last year, actually, last spring. I was taking a class with Kat Morris, who mentioned to me that Annika was looking to start this collaboration with the cultural centers, and she knew that I was super involved in PERLAC. And so she connected Annika and me, and Annika and I met and started talking about all the possibilities for a collaboration like this. And we partnered with Nijay Flowers, who was the president of Black Environmentalists for Social Change. And we started trying to craft like a series of events in that spring right before COVID hit. So it's really great to see and be part of all, because we were only able to get to one last spring, which was a meeting in the AACC where we talked about, we made a list of what we wanted to plant and what was possible to plant in this region. And that list ranged from like talking about like bok choy to collard greens to plantains. Like we were all just trying to throw out all suggestions for like our favorite foods ever. And so it, you know, kind of came to a halt. And I was worried about the future of it, because in a virtual world, it's so hard to connect, especially when we're trying to connect around putting our hands in the soil and farming together. But it's been so exciting that we've been able to carry this legacy over in a virtual format.
Yeah, and like we're always going to need, you can't farm virtually, you can't get food virtually. So we're always going to do that, even though you're in the pandemic and all.
We are pretty lucky that UConn's student activities sort of rules for this semester seem to indicate that we're going to be able to actually get people out there, get people farming, get people learning about the process and actually growing stuff this semester.
Yeah.
That's awesome to hear.
Exciting.
I don't know if I've told you guys this, but my cousin actually goes to Smith College and is on their sustainable student farm there. And they're still going, even though COVID's ongoing, they're still farming.
That's cool.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think it's very cool because Because I never used to think about farming as a form of environmentalism, but it's so related, and it's also very connected with like issues of hunger. Did you get any sort of insights about that at the panel from the legislators that were there about like this maybe more systemic issues surrounding this, the way things are connected?
We didn't have any farmers there. But I will say, I joined the UConn Spring Valley Student Farm after living in Detroit for 4 years. I just moved back here this semester. And when I lived here, there was not a single grocery store in the city. You had to leave the city, which is 134 square miles, to go outside to go to a grocery store. Oh, wow. And the only way people had access to like fresh fruits or vegetables was to grow themselves. And that was really eye-opening. For when I got here, I couldn't believe the like lack of access. And it's like sort of become well known that that's a phenomenon here in Detroit, but the reality is anywhere you go, there's really different levels of access to food depending on where you live. And it's often economically sort of separated or by race or by type of place. Even in like rural places in the country that, you know, grow most of the food that we consume, those have been taken over by dollar stores where you don't have grocery stores where you can go get fresh food somewhere. So it's this like really broad problem across the country, and tackling it is definitely a form of environmental justice, I would say.
It's such a big issue. I imagine as a large combination of a bunch of problems. So it's hard to pinpoint where exactly the issue is. So then it's hard to tell the story, and it's hard to educate people, and it's hard to make action around it.
Yeah. And I think that, Ben, that points beautifully to that concept of intersectionality that I feel like I always come back to, because, you know, when we're talking about environmental justice, it's talking about racial justice, which is talking about health justice. But if you don't have access to healthy foods, healthy, affordable foods, then you're not healthy. And if you're living in areas such as Detroit or New Haven, where I'm from New Haven, your access is different. And a lot of times these areas are experiencing the urban heat island effect. And so you have you have higher temperatures there, you have higher exposure to pollutants. And so all those factors just combine to put your health at risk in ways that you wouldn't if you were living somewhere else. So I feel like it always comes back to this intersection of so many issues. And I think what's great about planting our roots is that, you know, we can't solve all of the problems, but we can talk about the ways in which they're linked that sometimes we forget about.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things that we heard during the panel was sort of just a analysis of Connecticut standing. You know, it's I can sort of speak to Connecticut as an outsider because I'm not from there originally. It just seems like a really wealthy place that is like sort of suburban New York and Boston. But in addition to being the wealthiest state, it's the second most unequal in the entire country. Yep. And it's like there's serious fundamental issues with food access and health access. And it's the reason why you can travel from one municipality to an adjacent one and see a 10-year difference in average life expectancy, which is insane.
Just talking about food access and kind of bringing it back to farms, I was working at a farm in Lyme, Connecticut this summer, Long Table Farm. They're like a 6-acre organic farm. And they're very conscious of a lot of things, which was really nice. And it was a really great community. But one of the things that they did was they'd have their farmers markets every weekend, and then any extra produce was kind of excess and they didn't really know what to do with it. So they had a little farm stand that they put up once a week and just have like people, anyone who needed food could take some and leave a donation for their college fund for their niece, which was really nice. Also, that area is very rich, but because it's so rural, it's very difficult to go. I don't think there's a grocery store in that town. Even to like go to the nearest church was like a 4-mile drive, which I mean, just speaks to how inequitable it can be. There's can be a lot of rich people, but still, you know, a lot of people lack access to food and other basic needs.
Yeah, and like sometimes we take for granted that like we can drive somewhere and grab food, and like not all people have that option. Does anyone want to talk about what you guys think are the next steps for the initiative and like what that will involve and how it's going to affect our community?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Erin.
Yeah, so we're doing one more seed planting meeting. We did one back at the AACC last year where we got a really interesting list of foods that people are interested in growing and having access to near campus. This next meeting, yeah, we're going to finalize that list, order seeds from a list of seed catalogs and growers that are either from different like cultural backgrounds or regions, and get all the seeds, and then finally get out to Eco Garden and start planning stuff. Because we're allowed to do outdoor events with limited numbers of people and masks, anyone who has meetings or still interested in the project can come out and actually take part in the planting process. And then we'll be growing them this semester, and hopefully we'll have a sort of harvest event when the first stuff is done. Not all of it's gonna, you know, some stuff is gonna be seasonal, and so we'll have to wait until summer or fall, but whatever we're harvest this semester, we want to do a harvest event to sort of celebrate all the different foods and cultures and involvement of everybody.
Yeah, just another thing to add on to that. In addition to the harvest festival, we're trying to incorporate art a little bit and make it like a community art thing. So hopefully we can work on a mural or some sort of collage or something like that as another community building event.
That sounds really cool.
And just to add, I think, you know, aside from the events and where we want to take this initiative moving forward, I think it's also just important to remind ourselves that, you know, we're doing this as a form of nature RX in a way, and just putting our hands in the soil and reconnecting in ways that some people may not have in the past or feel hesitant to for personal reasons. This is our space. This is a space for students of color to come, students from the cultural centers to come and just experience this in a space that's for them and that invites them in, because we recognize that a lot of the environmental organizations on campus haven't always been welcoming to students of color and haven't really reflected the student population. And so we have tried this whole time to be really mindful of that and really ground ourselves in reclaiming that narrative for food and our culture, planting those culturally relevant crops, and also just creating a space for us to bond over our shared passion for our cultures.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, COVID has been hard. It's a hard time to be at school, and it's getting out into that sort of environment can start sort of a healing process after all of this is over. While it's still ongoing, but also after it's over.
Of course.
Yeah, no, environmentalism is very historically racist, and a lot of the groups currently, like this one, are led by white people, but we're trying not to play into those narratives and trying to be as inclusive as possible and support initiatives like this that are run by like Violet and Perlek, and try to support those as best as we can, because it's a really great initiative. And I really admire what you guys are doing. So I think we're about to close. We're about to wrap up. Before we do, I just want to know, what is living on the farm like? And like, do you have any like interesting or bizarre stories from that?
I'm living at Spring Valley right now. It's really great, especially, okay, during COVID, we're normally at 11 people with 2 houses, 1 house with 7 people, 1 house with 4 people. Because of COVID, we're reduced to half capacity, so we have 5 people. In my house, there's only 2 people instead of 7. So we have a really giant house for like no one, which is kind of nice that we get to spread out. Whereas like a lot of students forced to be inside in really small areas. it is much better when there's more people in a community. I love it. I haven't really been here. I mean, I worked at Spring Valley over the summer, but I haven't been at school when like we've been growing things, because I started before COVID and then had to leave in March. So I'm looking forward to growing things, but even in the winter, it's really pretty. It's very scenic and it's a great community to live in.
Even during COVID, but especially during normal times, there's some hippie nonsense. It's a great group of tight-knit people that spend a lot of the time, you know, doing the same responsibilities, but then, you know, it's right down this like dirt road from the Willimantic River, and so there's like any season of the year, people choose a day of the week or day of the month, we'll have a bonfire and then walk down to the river. I'm not a spiritual person, but it's like it's a very spiritual place to be. It's really beautiful. And if you haven't heard of Spring Valley Student Farm from our produce at the dining halls, you've probably heard of our Halloween party. So that's another thing that probably can't happen again, but it was always sort of a fun thing that we did with live bands and stuff. But it's a great place.
I love hippie nonsense. Yeah. Well, it was great to hear from you all. I've enjoyed this episode, and I want to thank everyone who's listening. Any last thoughts?
I want to ask Marissa, like, do you go to class and do homework?
You know what? Somehow I fit it into my day.
Unbelievable.
Nah, I don't understand.
Thank you, friends.
Of course.
Thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you all.
For having us.
Stay safe, please.
Yes, stay safe, and thank you to everyone who listened today. And if you want to learn more about our organization, you can go to PIRG, that's PIRG.UConn.edu.